You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, state Republican leaders say they hope to limit the powers of the governor's office before Democrat Tony Evers takes office as governor in January. We'll find out what changes could be in the works. First, the blaze known as the Camp Fire in Northern California is on the verge of becoming the deadliest wildfire in state history. It's also the most destructive in terms of the number of buildings destroyed. Meanwhile, two smaller fires continue to burn near Los Angeles. And firefighters may not get much help from the weather. Officials say hot, dry winds are expected to continue through tomorrow evening, raising the risk of new fires being ignited by flying embers. So what's causing these fires, and what, if anything, can be done to minimize the threat from future fires? Stephen Pine is a professor in the School of Life Sciences at Arizona State University. He's written more than 30 books, including Between Two Fires, A Fire History of Contemporary America. Stephen, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Before we dig into the bigger picture of fires and their prevention, can you talk about this particular fire, the Camp Fire, and why it seems to have spread so quickly and been so devastating?
Well, I don't have details. I'm gleaning out from what I've been able to read from the major news. But it's really the same formula as hit Northern California last fall. You've got a lot of open country with towns embedded in it. In this case, we seem to be in a valley, in effect a flume for carrying winds. And, of course, we have really strong offshore winds. The northern winds tend to be called the monos. They have different names. Southern California, they're Santa Anas, but it's essentially the same wind. What's missing in this is the cause. Last fall, there were almost all power lines. That may be the case here. I don't think we know yet. But if so, then you have an ignition that occurs under absolutely the worst possible conditions. That is, it is the high winds that result that cause the ignition, set that into motion, and then propel it. And then it goes through a lot of grass and low woodland areas. And in this case, you have a community right in the way, and it is just overrun by a veritable blizzard of sparks, and millions of sparks. Any point of vulnerability, they'll find it.
It seems like there have been a lot of simple answers offered up over the years to prevent wildfires, more logging, or climate change is the culprit, or people live too close to fire-prone areas. Reading some of what you've written about this, it's way more complicated than any answer you could sum up in one line, I think. Is that right?
It is. I think the way I've come to think about fires, remember that fires are reaction. So it's synthesizing its setting. And I think of it as a driverless car. It's barreling down the road, integrating everything around it. And at some points, there's a steep curve called climate change. Maybe another place, there's a bad intersection we call where people and nature are colliding. It may be, the road's filled with potholes and road debris left from, poor land use practices. It's all of these. And at any one place and occasion, one tends to dominate, but they're all out there. And I actually, that makes it complicated, but I regard it as good news because it means there are lots of points of intervention possible. There's no one thing that we have to do. There are many things we can do, and a lot of the small things can add up.
We'll dig into some of those different strategies that would help. I want to start now with President Trump. He put out a tweet over the weekend. I'm quoting here. There is no reason for these massive, deadly, and costly forest fires in California except that forest management is so poor. Billions of dollars are given each year with so many lives lost, all because of gross mismanagement of the forests. Remedy now or no more Fed payments. So keying in on this idea that forests are being mismanaged, that's why we have a fire like the Camp Fire. What do you say to that?
Well, if everybody in California vanished overnight, California would still have large fires. It would have explosive fires, and some of them wouldn't stop till they reached the Pacific. So we can aggravate those conditions. We can ameliorate those conditions, but we're not going to stop the fundamentals. They're simply built into the physical geography of California. There are things we can do. The one big point of mediation is vegetation or fuels. We can't stop winds, we can't stop mountains, We can intervene with fuels and where we choose to live, how we choose to live on the landscape, where we choose to put our communities and so forth. Those are things we can do. And we haven't paid as much attention maybe as we should. I think reading the Trump administration's subtext, they simply want more logging. And there's no evidence that logging is going to solve the problem. There's plenty of evidence that logging, unless you clean up very expensively afterwards, will aggravate the problem. So I think that's this might simply be misdirection. They're using alarm and horror over an event to try to promote something which they want, but which really doesn't solve it. And the issue is a simple one, that fire is a chemical process. Logging is a physical one. It removes stuff. Logging takes the big stuff and leaves the little. Fire burns the little stuff and leaves the big. So, you know, after this fire, those portions of it that even go through forests, you'll see lots of burned tree trunks. Well, that's exactly what logging would have taken out in advance. So it's hard to understand how that's going to change the outcome. Instead, all the debris that's left, all that small stuff, is some of the most volatile fuels known on the planet. So you have to clean those up. Maybe often you burn it, which leads to possibility for escape fires. And it certainly causes lots of smoke. So there are always trade-offs. It's hard to see that logging is a solution here.
Talking to Stephen Pine, wildfire expert at Arizona State University, about the current wildfires in California and more generally why wildfires happen and how to mitigate their damage. And Stephen, let's get into a bunch of those small things you mentioned. There's a lot of different things, maybe some appropriate for different areas. It seems like one big point that you write about is an idea of, and you were alluding to this, fuel management. How in an area where people are living, in a place where fires might happen, how do we manage the fuel that feeds those flames?
Yeah, there's a place, there are a bunch of small things you can do, and again, they depend on the local conditions. There's a place where you may want to put in expansive green belts around some of these communities, so that when a fire hits it, it may still propagate, but it's not going to rage with the kind of intensity that we're seeing slamming into these communities. You may want to do some prescribed burning. In other words, substitute some preemptive, controlled, or tame burning for unpredicted wildfire. Why turn your fire problem over to lightning or power lines or arsonists? Do the burning yourself. There are places where you may want to thin out the woods, particularly the understory, because that's the small stuff that burns, particularly where the landscape is used to lots of surface fires. And if you eliminate those, then it tends to grow up with a much thicker cover over that story, which leads to intense fires and can actually get into the canopies of the trees. So that's a place, that's a kind of woody weeding. It's thinning. It's not really logging in the sense, because you're not hauling out much merchantable timber, if any. And there may be some places where some prescribed logging, if you will, would be appropriate, particularly around communities, as a way of thinning out some of this, some of the canopy, particularly where fires naturally spread through the canopies. So in that case, you may want to interrupt the canopy. But these are all different things, and they're all going to depend, and very few of them will probably pay for themselves on their own. They'd almost all require some kind of fiscal subsidy. But even more, there's the political capital that has to be expended. And I would say even beyond that, the social capital, getting people to agree that there's a problem, getting them to agree on what cocktail of solutions they can live with. That seems to be the fundamental stumbling block. We know plenty about fire and fire behavior and how communities burn. To begin resolving these issues, we don't need to wait for a large research project. We simply, at this point, we just don't seem to have mustered the sense that it's a big enough problem. And I'm beginning to think of these mass burnings as the flip side of mass shootings. It just, another town burned, another community got shot up. You keep thinking we've reached a tipping point, and we haven't gotten there yet.
When it comes to funding, we're obviously putting a lot of money into fighting fires as they're raging, into recovery after. Is that taking money away from preventing fires?
Well, yes and no. There are emergency funds which are available, but Congress changed the rules a while back, and so the federal agencies in particular are having to draft out of their regular operating budgets, and that gets complicated. And then you have the states, where the states have primary responsibility, and this is a CAL FIRE, a state operation. Many of the big fires in Oregon earlier this year are state operations, and the state is having to pay serious money, tens of millions of dollars, to manage, to deal with these fires. And that's requiring supplemental appropriations. So we can no longer foist all of the costs on the feds, and the feds can't foist all of it on emergency responses. At some point, you decide that, you know, preventative measures, some remediation is really in order. Otherwise, it's like you know, a healthcare program where you spend billions on emergency response, but not very much on vaccinations or simply basic wellness visits.
I want to touch on global warming before we're done. We have had fires, wildfires, pre-global warming. We would continue to have them without. That said, does global warming make wildfires more likely or more destructive?
Well, it changes it. And the key ingredient, I think, for fire, understanding fire, is the rhythm of wetting and drying. So you have to, it has to be wet enough to grow fuel and then dry enough to let it burn. And where you have that on an annual or frequent basis, then you have a natural fire. And what global warming seems to be doing is accentuating those rhythms. They're getting more extreme. In many ways, it's a performance enhancer. It's acting on a set of conditions and generally worsening it. There may be places where it changes, it flips it to wetter conditions or others, but we would have to see how that actually plays out in particular settings.
We'll leave it there for now. Stephen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you. Have a good one.
Stephen Pine is a professor in the School of Life Sciences at Arizona State University. He's written more than 30 books, including Between Two Fires, A Fire History of Contemporary America. Talk to them about the causes of wildfires and what can be done to prevent them.